everybody. You are listening to the Room for Both podcast. We are Nicole and Meredith, longtime friends who decided to start this podcast to process the gray areas of life. Sometimes we'll have strong opinions. Mostly we'll have a lot of questions. At the end of the day, we want this to be a conversation that leaves room for both, for going deep and keeping it light, for funny and serious. Our hope is that by dialoguing in such an intentional and inclusive way, we can learn and grow and just get a better sense of how much we're all just in this together.
Hey folks, Jeff here, co-producer and sound guy for the Room for Both podcast. Today's episode picks up on Brené Brown's guidepost number 3, which is cultivating a resilient spirit, letting go of numbing and powerlessness. The girls are going to separate their conversation into two parts, so this is part one. Let's get to it.
Before we get into the meat of our podcast, we are going into our first segment, which we are calling Shoot the Breeze. It's literally the time of the show where we catch up and talk about things we're loving, that we're into, just the light stuff, you know? So we think you'll enjoy this little bit.
How's your day going?
Oh my gosh, I got up at the ass crack of dawn. I was so proud of myself. And I
like
got up
voluntarily
and read.
Or did you set
yeah,
an alarm?
My body, no, body was just awake. And I was like, okay, girl, way to go. And got up and I read and then I kind of journaled a little bit. I had a really great call this week with my Enneagram coach and wow, there was a lot of gentle ass handing to me. And I was like,
that.
Oh God, I've got a lot to think through. So sat with that for a little bit, did my Onyx method. Scott stole my coffee, was real pissed about that, but that's okay. I texted him and I was like, bro, that is not okay. You owe me a coffee. Like
he
I literally
just straight up took it.
Thank you. I mean, and you know, he is so wonderful, honey. I'm gonna back it up because I know you'll hear this. He is so wonderful in so many ways and he's so giving and kind. And that is not typical of him. So I'm really trying to find grace, but what the hell, man? You stole my hot coffee that I had perfectly prepared with my mineral powder and my collagen peptides and my perfectly grass-fed, whatever the hell kind of half and half
it's
I buy, bougie-ass half and half, and you stole it.
It's getting worse.
I know. I am, honestly, I'm getting mad again as I talk about it. So I got to take a breath. Where's
okay,
an essential oil?
I
got to like
on.
Whiff something. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tell me what's giving you life so that we
oh
can
gosh.
Get you out of this.
Yeah,
anger swirl that I got you in.
What's giving me life right now? I'm going to tell you what's giving me life. I have to stand up so you can see. I'm going to hope
yes.
that I can do this with my headset in. I have a matching sweatsuit on. Thank you.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh, there are bottoms to go with that top.
And she's adorable. It's like, I think it's organic cotton. I could be making that up, but it's by this new company that I was introduced to, Z Supply, just a Z, like the end of the alphabet, Z Supply. And I think they're making strides towards becoming sustainable. I don't know if they're there yet, but I was Instagram influenced, which doesn't happen to me often, shockingly.
Good on you.
But
good on
I
you.
I was like, gosh, I love a sweatsuit. I work from home so much. I'd love to match and feel like kind of cute. So I had this like matching, really soft feeling cotton.
Y'all, it's adorable.
It's not cotton. It's something else, but it's a camo. It is. It's giving me all the damn feels. So like in my house, obviously where I have my slippers, we're a shoe-free house, but like out, I'll wear my cute little Adidas or Adidas, as they say in Europe.
Yeah.
And be so cute. So I'm
already
very here for this.
It.
Yeah. Very here for the jumpsuit. You know, I love a jumpsuit. I always have. J-Lo for life. Get me my big hoops.
Mine
and I'm
ready. Is so much less fun than that. Well, maybe it'll be fun for some listeners, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fun. Bring it on.
Once again, my Shoot the Breeze is something that you brought into my life. So really, Shoot the Breeze is like you should be in charge of this segment for us. We've been reading Nora, these books from the Slumberkins series. Okay, so y'all, when I was pregnant with Nora, Mare sent us a book called Slumber Sloth. And it's by this company, Slumberkins. It's two women, Kelly Oryard and Callie Christensen, who Jeff and I, we say their names every day because we read these books to Nora every day.
Oh my God, I love that.
And sometimes Jeff even reads her the about the authors section when we feel like she wants a little bit more. So we know a lot about Kelly and Callie. But essentially, they just saw a need in the children's book market for books that teach more social emotional health.
Yeah.
And so they have this these series of these books that the one you got us is for sleep. And so it helps walk us as a family through this whole wind down series of like deep breaths and calming our body and then calming our mind. It's lovely. I've since bought this is Jeff's favorite to read, Narwhal. And this one's about like having a growth mindset. So it's about being able to adapt to change and solve problems. There's ones on themes like authenticity and stress relief and grief and loss. And they're just the most lovely books. And they come with the softest little, I brought the Slumber Sloth.
Yes.
Softest little so stuffed animal. They're just so sweet. And she loves these. Like she has started sucking on the hands of them. I need to figure out how to wash them and keep them soft. But anyways, this we are loving.
That makes me so happy because it is one of my favorite gifts to give. And every mama and baby, and as they grow into toddler, whatever, like still loves their Slumberkins. It's an incredible company. Like, and their backgrounds are, is it education? And one was a school counselor, maybe?
One is an elementary and special ed teacher. And then the other was, a family therapist and licensed school counselor.
I found out about the company when I ran that Instagram account, Go Forth, and was just like looking up movers and shakers who kind of saw a need and whatever that looked like for them and kind of created something out of said need. And I am like such a fan of them. I'm like that. I feel like everyone needs to know about it. So I'm so glad that you brought them up. And you can buy the book separate from the Slumber Sloth. Like it comes in a package if you want to send that as a gift, but like you're saying,
yes,
you can independently buy the books as well.
Yes. And they just, the themes are so smart, like relaxation, self-esteem, mindfulness, like, I want the full collection. Maybe one day we'll build up to that. But the only other book that I'll offer, if there are new mamas out there, we also read her the Going to Bed book. And I forget who it's by in this moment. Sandra Boynton. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff's like, oh, I'm on it.
It's such a good book. So a colleague sent it to me while I was pregnant and said it was the favorite book to read to her little boy because it's so freaking short, and which is so practical for a bedtime book because you're exhausted. And so it's literally like 5 pages, super cute. You read them a story, you put them to bed. So mama's out there who needs something highly practical, that's another really good one.
That's amazing.
Now we're going to move into the more meaty part of the show that we're calling Processing Out Loud. This is the portion of the podcast where we're going to dive into topics we've been thinking about or wrestling with and really just invite you along for the journey.
Guidepost number 3.
Yes. Do you want to recap what it is?
Yeah. If you're just joining us and if you've kind of just hopped in randomly, we have been taking the rest of season 2 to... Actually, where are we? We're in season 2, right?
Yes. Yeah, I know.
Okay, great.
I know.
We've been dedicating it to going through the guideposts to wholehearted living. That there are 10 guideposts to wholehearted living found in Brené Brown's book, The Gifts of Imperfection. So today's guidepost that we're going to kind of unpack is cultivating a resilient spirit, letting go of numbing and powerlessness. And wow, I have to say, I highlighted so much here and so much was so helpful and also very new to me. I mean, a lot of her stuff, you know, is new, but some of it, when you read it, you kind of, your soul clicks and you go, oh, that makes sense. But this,
totally.
There were really genuinely a lot of like new concepts for me that her research unveiled. And I thought, that's interesting. Oh, I hadn't. Oh, wow. You know, so anyway,
it also felt super timely to be talking about resilience because I feel like with this pandemic, it just feels like it's like global resilience that we're going through right now.
Good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some days that looks better than others, like at least in our home.
Sure.
So it was, I don't know, it just felt like so much struck a chord with me because of the reality that we're living in right now.
What did you think about resiliency tied to the idea of hope? And then beneath that, the idea that hope means having a sense of agency. That struck me. So talk to me about, especially as somebody who has genuinely been in lockdown. I mean, genuinely in the UK for
almost a year.
Going on a year. Yeah. Like for real tried and true lockdown. What has resiliency looked like, and what, however you want to answer that,
I
would be curious about the agency and hope piece if that came up for you.
Yeah. So this is like such a mundane answer for something related to hope, but this is literally what I was thinking about, especially this idea of agency, because I agree with you. I found that so, so, so empowering because especially with what we're living in with the pandemic right now and like legally having lockdown measures in place,
right.
There's so much out of our sphere of control right now that this idea of hope and how it's tied to agency, it feels like, like asking this question of like, okay, well, what is in my control? Like, what can I do for my mental health? I can't go meet friends for a meal, and I can't have people into my home, which gives me so much life. But like, what things can I do? It is just such an empowering thing. And I feel like just recently, I was telling Jeff, I sort of had this mental shift because I don't know if you saw this post that Jen Hatmaker had where she was talking about like how her nighttime self takes like takes steps to make her morning self have a good morning, and then her daytime self takes steps to help her nighttime self have a good night. And it was this idea of self-care, but it really like changed my perspective on cleaning for me, because I feel like up until maybe a couple weeks ago even, and maybe I'm just really late to the adult party, I will own that.
But hilarious.
I've resented cleaning. Like, it feels like this thing that I have to do. And I feel like this helped me rethink about it, where it's like, no, it's this thing that it's actually self-care, because I hate looking at like the dog hair all over my bedroom. And so I got in this habit of like running a daily vacuum in the bedroom as a place of taking care of myself, as opposed to this thing that I begrudgingly have to do. And it like was such a game changer. And I don't know if this is answering your question at all, but I think it is this like small shift of mindset of like recognizing the agency that we have, even if it's small in the big scheme of things, like because of other things that are outside of our control. But I do think that that leads to some level of like bigger, broader hope in a sense, because you're at least taking action in these like small ways that you have agency. I don't know. What came up for you?
Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. And I really love that, because it is like, because what I hear you essentially saying is like, okay, I cannot, like exactly what you said, I cannot control so much. I'm literally powerless over so much. What do I have power over?
Like, yes.
I'm powerless over so many external circumstances, but what do I have power over? Okay. What helps my soul feel somewhat at rest and peace, you know?
Yes.
A clean bedroom or a made bed in Jen Hatmaker's case and whatever. I want to read, just so you listener, if you're not familiar with this chapter, the idea that she's talking about, that we're specifically talking about right now, is that hope, per her research, is not an emotion. I'm going to read just this quick paragraph. Hope is not an emotion. It's a way of thinking or a cognitive process. In very simple terms, she says, hope happens when we have the ability to set realistic goals. We're able to figure out how to achieve those goals, and we believe in ourselves. So there's a sense of agency with hope. It was I don't know why that was so interesting for me to read. I'll read this last sentence that she says. Hope is a combination of setting goals, having the tenacity and perseverance to pursue them, and believing in our own abilities. That struck me. And I wrote out in the side, in the, what are those called?
The margins.
That's it. I was like, what's that word?
Out there on the margins.
But, I was like, what is it? Believing in our own abilities as a means of hope. I literally wrote, I don't know how well I believe in my own abilities. I think that there is this like sense of, I don't feel like my life is hopeless. I don't walk around like, oh gosh. But but it was interesting to read. I've always actually thought that I have this sense of relentless hope, right?
Yeah.
Just like, no, things are going to be okay. This is going to be okay. Except for I still have a lot of that like wing six in me, which, by the way, listener, if you listen to the Enneagram episodes, I reference being a six. I'm actually a seven, as I've come to learn recently. So I'm switching the narrative here. But like the six wing, I think, is still always kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. However, yes. I still think I've had this like low level anxiety of the other shoe dropping just because life experience, but also still this relentless hope, I think, or and maybe it's naive hope or something, right? So I don't feel like I live this hopeless life, but when I get kind of still about agency and like what I am doing, do I believe in my own ability? I don't know. I don't know. I think it actually prevents me from doing a lot of things because I don't know that I can hack it. So
that's interesting.
Not that this is about imposter syndrome, but that's what came up for me in that particular part of this chapter.
Interesting. I feel like when I read, because part of her section there too, she talks about how hope can be learned, and as parents,
yes,
we can teach our children. And I just felt the sense of responsibility of like, oh my gosh, like what do we have to do to teach our children to hope? So I almost like got anxiety thinking about the responsibility of that. And then the other thing that came up for me in that section was just, I wonder how much that understanding of hope comes from a place of privilege. Like I think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I think hope is a cord, a thread that runs through all levels of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Are you saying like on that Maslow's hierarchy of needs that there are plenty of groups of people who, because there are basic needs not met, like who has the energy to think about like, what are my goals and how do I achieve those goals? And I believe in myself.
Yeah,
kind of
like
thing.
Self-actualization isn't until like till you have food in your belly or you're like not fearing for your life. Although I think hope is a huge component that I think would transcend all of those layers. So maybe, maybe hope. I just think her definition of hope felt more like it belonged in that self-actualization realm for people who can take the time to set goals and like do all these things. But I really think hope transcends all of those. So I just wonder, I wonder about that.
Well, and to that point, I don't know. I haven't done enough work in this area. So admittedly, there are going to be tons of gaps in kind of my thinking through this. But, you know, some of the most resilient populations are ones that do struggle with having basic needs met, right? Like there is this soulful gut. Like I'm thinking about like when I was in Mexico and in church services with this group of incredible people that I got to kind of do life alongside for the small amount of time that I was there. There was this groundedness, this bodily kind of experience that they have like communally.
Yes.
They're so much more affectionate than we are in their their church services, like very just I don't know how to describe it other than like they were very in their bodies, right?
Yes.
Like not afraid to dance, to sing, to cry, to yell, to yelp, to connect with one another, to connect with God. Like there is this very, and there is this, the resiliency is palpable. The hope is palpable. And so I actually wonder too, to your point about like, where does this fit in? Is this, is her definition? And honestly, I would be so curious for her to like circle back around to this one day. Anyway, Brené, call us, you know, but I think it would be so interesting to think about this definition through the lens of like faith communities and even poorer communities where they're like, it's almost like resiliency is inherent inherent. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think because resiliency is needed, you know, and I also think what she was talking about with at some point she breaks down like what her research with the data said about like the five components of resilient people that she saw over and over and over again in her research.
Yes.
And I found it so interesting that three of those had a communal aspect to them. So one of them is that resilient people are more likely to seek help when they need it. That they have social support available, that's another factor. And then they're connected with others in a meaningful way. And I feel like I was thinking about the community, the immigrant community that I lived with for a period of time in Virginia. And I would say,
yeah,
they do community so well, and they support, like, my problem isn't just my problem. My problem is the community's problem. And so I feel like you're saying, it's my experience with that community is that it was so inherently, it was so baked into their culture and how they did life. And those are like three of the five components of what Brené found in her research on resiliency, you know?
And I wonder too, even like number three, they hold the belief that they can do something that will help them to manage their feelings and to cope. When she's talking about what, really quickly, listener, for context, she's talking about five things that make up resilience. I just read number three, hold the belief that they can do something that will help them to manage their feelings and to cope. That doesn't necessarily have to do with community, but I actually wonder if, because there is a more, I don't know, bodily experience. I don't know another way to say that. I just sense that there is just so much of a deeper connection to their bodies and the humanity, their own humanity, because they're living in such a strong community, the humanity of others. Like, I wonder if people with the gift of being in their bodies, if they don't know any other way but to be resilient or to be hopeful because they're already in their bodies. They already know to feel. Does that make sense? I think that's what I'm trying to bumble at. It's like feelings are, they're like, yeah, this is a way of life. Like, it's, life is hard. It is grueling. It is unpredictable, and it is sacred. And I've got my people, and I don't know. And honestly, I know I sound so, I think the reason I'm bumbling through this so much is because I realize how privileged I sound.
And I mean, the point of our conversations is us dialoguing about how these, at least for this series, right, these principles are lived out in our life. And like, is, I didn't mean to like grossly oversimplify, you know, a comparison that I was seeing somewhere or like a question that I had somewhere else. Like, I'm sure there's an aspect of us that are doing that right now. It just, it was something that was interesting to think about, of like how much of these definitions are, and not to a fault of Brené's, but like are also reflective of like the social context out of which she comes from. And I think like you're saying, I do think there are communities of people that we've both like had exposure to where it just feels like culturally and spiritually and the way that they live day in and day out, it seems like there's a lot to be learned about resiliency from folks who have had to be resilient because of some of the circumstance that they're up against in a way that we as privileged, able-bodied, you know, middle class women, white women haven't necessarily had to. So I feel like that perspective is important. And obviously we're not the people who are going to be able to fully bring it, but.
Yes. Thank you. You just said everything I was like feeling and bumbling my tension. I was like, I'm not the one to say this, but this was what I saw. Thank you. You really like tied that all together nicely. But like to your point about those communities, you know, spirituality being baked into those communities, right? Like when she says, is spirituality a necessary component for resilience? The answer is yes. I think.
Yeah. How did you feel about that in reading it?
Oh, I felt like, okay. Yeah. Like it felt kind of helpful, hopeful. It is. I don't know. I think that there's a really beautiful connection between spirituality and resilience, and those two being, having such a symbiotic relationship. Yeah.
I think so. I feel like what I'm learning about myself is when I read absolutes, I start to like, what's the word that I would use? I'm like making the body language, but I can't find the word for it.
Cringe.
Yeah. So when she's like, is spirituality absolutely necessary? Is it that, does it have to be the foundation of resilience? And she says, yes. At first I was like, ooh, that sounds like so black and white in a way. And where I think I landed, because I think I fundamentally believe that that's true. And I know that her research has like proven that over and over and over again. I think it's important like that she goes on to give definition to what she means by spirituality, because it doesn't mean Christian spirituality. It doesn't even mean religious spirituality. Right. Like, it means this connection to something bigger than ourselves and our connection to one another that can add context and perspective and meaning and purpose to our reality. And I think in light of that definition, oh my gosh, I resonate so, 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 so much at a personal level that like when I'm not whole and healthy spiritually, or when I'm not actively seeking out connection to that which is bigger than me, the bigger narrative and the bigger frame,
yep.
It's really fucking hard to be resilient.
Yeah, it's almost like what I hear you saying and that I so deeply affirm as well, or believe or agree with, that's what I'm trying to say, is that spirituality comes by way of interconnectedness, right? Mm-hmm. Like to each other, to this sense of just greater community connection to, whether for you that's God or the universe or people around you, a sense of community. Like there is this sense of something is bigger than me.
Yes.
Insert the blank, yes. But that is the spiritual component to it that moves you into this place of resiliency.
Yes.
Or the resiliency is kind of done to you. I don't know how all that works, but there is this mysticism there that I think is so powerful and beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like the more I come back to relationship with, like for me, that word is God, and I'm comfortable with that word again. I didn't used to be, but it could be mystery.
Sure.
It could be nature. It could be love. It could be reality. Like, right?
Yeah.
Fill in the blank.
Sure.
And the more I get back in touch with connection to God, the more for me it feels laughable that I try to do life without that connection, or to be mm-hmm. the type of yeah. human that I'm trying to be, or that I want to be, or aspire to be, without that connection to
yeah.
God. And so, obviously, Mary, you know that I'm about a year in, oh no, not even, like maybe 9 months in at the Living School at this point. As part of that, it's committing to a contemplative practice. And for me, that's been centering prayer, which is essentially like it's a Christian form of meditation. And what I've learned in actually trying to have a spiritual discipline, a spiritual practice, and ground myself in this connection with something bigger than me consistently is, I think spirituality to me used to be way more about ideas about God and beliefs about God as opposed to experience of God.
Yes.
And taking 20 minutes every day I'm trying, that's the intention, right? 20 minutes every day to actually try to connect with and experience God, and then let that, you know, manifest itself in the way I engage in the world, to where I'm actually encountering God so much more throughout my day. That's so transformative, as opposed to like beliefs about God.
Right.
Does that resonate at all?
It does. I mean, I know you can't see me because I had to turn my video off to conserve internet, but I was breathing deeper. I had this like sweet smile on my face. I'm like very like serene as you're talking about that, because it reminds me of our conversation around experiential knowing, and just like the way in which we can put aside theology, frameworks, beliefs, what's been handed to us, the Bible, for just a second, and like, God, who are you? Like, where are you moving within me? Like, what, just where
yeah.
are you? Give me eyes to see and ears to hear. I mean, I literally have my hand on my heart, and it's just this sense of like going inward with the divine. I mean, this is my framework, right? This doesn't have to be your framework, listener, but like for me, it is like, okay, God, there is movement and energy and a beautiful kinetic force, maybe I'll say. So you're right. This experiential knowing and moving through this life in relationship with this deeper knowing, with this spirit that, you know, I would call that the spirit of God. It lends us the resiliency needed to make it through this at times shit show called life.
Yes.
You know,
it so does. And at least that's been my experience. And I think it's so interesting that I know that because I've experienced it to be true. And yet in the moment when I'm overwhelmed by, you know, the fact that we still can't leave our house or have friends over, like my
right.
tendency is to go towards the numbing behavior of whether it's watching a Netflix series or like avoiding the reality of my life as opposed to connecting with the bigger narrative so that I can have that resilient spirit. It's just, it feels like every day is a struggle between those things of like, am I going to do the thing that I know is life-giving, or am I going to like succumb to the numbing because I don't want to deal with the reality of what life has for me today? And I feel like depending on the day, I make a different choice.
Thanks for listening to the Room for Both podcast. We're always open for feedback, so if there was something that you resonated with or would like for us to discuss, please visit roomforbothpodcast.com or find us on Instagram at roomforbothpodcast and drop us a line. And also, while you're at it, would you do us a solid and rate this podcast so that we can eventually pay our sound guy?